At California Psychics, we know some people can't read the career warning signs, like your boss still not knowing your name.
You, Tina, Lisa, Sheila, whatever. Get that report to me by lunch, okay?
It's Carrie, ma'am?
Just get it done, Terry.
So talk to California Psychics and receive the career guidance you need. We only connect you with the very best, so guarantee if your reading isn't life-changing, it's free. California Psychics. Call 1-800-PREDICT today and get 20 minutes for just $20.
Hey, I'm gum disease. You may know me by my formal name, periodontal disease. No? I can't believe this. No respect. Same story everywhere I go. Over half of all adults in America live with me and they act like they don't even know I exist. I mean, come on. Whole body health? I am gum disease. I am literally linked to almost every major disease. Diabetes, heart disease, Alzheimer's. You can't just ignore me.
Find a dentist near you committed to caring about all of you. Visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Kara here. All right, what am I doing today? I am looking through this beautiful bread cookbook. We got all the basics today. I'm talking about bread, talking about applesauce, and talk about the new revamp of Burrow in the North Loop. So we got a little, not exactly bread and circuses, bread and applesauce. That's what we're doing today. All right. So here's who's on the line. If you've been in this bread baking game of ours the last, 30 years, I know you know Daniel Leader's name. He wrote that Bread Alone cookbook, one of the foundational elements of our current bread renaissance that we're living through, where all the bread is awesome. He put out a book a couple years ago on kind of the artisan baking that's happening in America, and he's got this new one right out now called Living Bread, and it's kind of a travel log in some ways about the most interesting bakers who are doing very interesting things. In Europe, a lot of it is, and I gotta tell you, I'm a little jaded. Like, I've read a lot of bread recipes. My jaw was on the floor of a bunch of these in the back. I mean, they're just very detailed recipes, interesting ways of cooking, interesting ways of thinking about flour from deep inside Italy and Germany, Northern Europe. So I'm just excited about this conversation. Daniel Leader is on the show. We'll just leap right into it. Daniel, welcome.
Well, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
I know so many of our listeners have Bread Alone on their shelves because you really kicked off a revolution when you wrote that or whatever the word is. And so you have had a life in bread.
Yeah, I mean, my bakery, Bread Alone, is celebrating its 36th anniversary on October 1st, the same day that Living Bread is published. So, yeah, it's been a few years.
Congratulations. That's impressive.
Yeah, it's been great. I mean, I was very lucky to kind of get in this bread game early, and my early mentors were some really, important bakers in France. And so I learned from, really from the old timers, and I try to pass that knowledge along.
All right. Well, let's talk about what you're up to these days. So tell us about Living Bread. I think a lot of you say in your introduction to the book that you have some 200 baking books on your shelf. So, talk about what you wanted to contribute now.
Well, I say that I'm a graduate of the Backdoor School of Baking, which means that I've been very lucky to go to back doors of many bakeries and have those doors opened and have people really show me what is special about their work, what is special about their ingredients, what is special about their breads. And this book is really a testament to my good fortune that I've met so many wonderful bakers and wonderful people, and I wanted to write about it. And the world of bread is evolving. I mean, if I think back to what I was exposed to, you know, 35, 40 years ago, to what is happening now, you know, it's I use the analogy of, you know, Whole Foods started in 1983. Okay, nobody knew what Whole Foods was. Everybody knows what Whole Foods, you know, what Whole Foods Market is today. And I think that bread baking is in many ways following a renaissance of food awareness. And so I wanted to just write about the changing world of bread, what's old and what's new.
All right. Well, let's talk about, I thought that this was mainly about what's old, but let's go right down this road. What's new? So there's some ingredients and techniques. So obviously a lot of people that are listening to this are bakers. I know home baking has never died here in the Great North, which I'm very happy about. But let's talk about some of the stuff. One of the things I was really surprised about is how many of your rye breads use a not just a starter, but also a kind of toasted crumbs. Tell me about that.
Well, you know, rye breads in Europe, especially people who focus on rye breads, you know, the rye starter is just one of the foundations of great rye bread. People take old bread, they grind it up, they toast it, and they soak it. Some people do hot water soakers where they actually cook rye flour and water together as a way of getting more water in the dough. Because, you know, getting the max amount of water in bread is what makes it really delicious. And then, you know, people are using time and temperature in very interesting ways to coax out flavor, to coax out texture. So it's a mix of interesting ingredients, it's a mix of time, and it's a mix of temperature, and it's also following very, you know, some of these breads that have, like, toasted rye flour, toasted rye bread in them, it's still a very traditional recipe.
Okay, but it's, I want to talk about all the different things. For one thing, I did not know how many breads were using these different, you know, we'll just focus on rye for a minute here. You know, it seems like a very thrifty thing. It seems like something people might have done in a world before iPhones and refrigeration and, you know, FedEx. But it's, you know, so tell me actually just about that. Is this a rediscovery of a way that people were doing things for hundreds of years, or not rediscovery, but, you know, putting forward something that people have done for generations, or is it a full on new technique?
No, it's something that people have done for a long time, but it's something that was kind of, you know, hidden away in bakeries. You know, you'd go to the back room and there would be rye breads drying, and then it would have a grinding machine. And it's not something that, I don't want to say it's an old thing that's new. It's kind of, there's a light shown on it now. And so it's an old technique. And in the same way that, you know, sourdough isn't new, but if you were to look at Instagram now, you would think that sourdough is something that was just invented. I mean, so many people are excited about it. So I think that there's a variety of techniques that have been in the baker's toolbox, that because baking was kind of a quiet world that people didn't pay a lot of attention to, and now that bread is getting focused, these techniques are coming to the light.
Okay, so it was kind of a world where you'd be a baker and you'd take on an apprentice, and it was, I don't want to say an oral tradition, but something like that. It was a very hands-on.
Oh, very much so.
Okay. So, and then the crumbs, I'm just keep talking about these crumbs. I'm obsessed. They are a way to get moisture into a rye bread?
It's one of the ways, okay? So, you know, bread that is baked and ground up absorbs water in a different way than flour and water. Okay, and when you put this, let's call it a mush, you know, when you have this ground up bread and you put hot water in it, it can hold a lot more water than just rye flour and water. So it's a way to add texture, it's a way to add flavor, it's a way to add color, because you might when you grind this up, you have the caramelization of the crust. So it you're doing many things at the same time.
That's very interesting to me, because I've been eating bread and walking around and trying bakeries, and, you know, you always kind of hit this level where what a really good bakery can do is better than what you can do with a packet or a Red Star yeast in your kitchen.
Yeah, I do want to add one point about the rye breads that I forgot to mention, and that is that rye breads that are a staple of Northern Europe, let's say from mid-Germany up through, you know, all of Germany, up to Latvia, Finland, Sweden, Norway, these dark Northern European rye breads are a staple there. And we're just learning about that staple here. So it's kind of like it's very new to us because we don't know about it. But it's not new to these bakers that I went to visit and write about.
Well, yes, I know. But a lot of us don't get into the bakeries of Czechoslovakia or whatever. Yeah. All right. Another area I really want to talk to you about is Italy. I think that in, you know, you're a sophisticated bakery goer in North America. You feel like you know the Italian breads. You feel like you're aware of, you know, a semolina loaf and the Christmas breads. But no, that's not all there is. Altamura, where is it?
Altamura is an area in Puglia, southeastern Italy, not far from Bari. And Altamura is the home of a very, very famous bread called Pane di Altamura. And this bread has what they call a DOP, a Denominazione Originata Prodotto, which basically means...
Yeah, so if people are listening, like, that's the same stuff they put on the very fancy cheeses and the very good wines.
Exactly. So there's only two breads that I know of in Italy, the Pane Genzano and the Pane Altamura, that has this DOP. And it basically, this DOP says that in order for a bread to have this special sticker, the DOP sticker, it has to be made with certain ingredients, with certain type of sourdough, baked in certain shapes, and baked in a wood-fired oven. And it even goes so far as to how thick the crust has to be in order to be called this Pane Altamura. And it's made from a very, very refined semolina flour. So it's a very golden crumb and a very, very darkish red-brown crust, but very, very, very rugged. And this bread, Altamura and the neighboring town Matera, these are small towns. I don't know offhand how big they are. But these breads get shipped all over Italy. That's how famous. And they get shipped into Germany. I know stores in Germany that sell the true Pane Altamura with the DOP sticker on it. So it's a very special bread. It's a very simple technique. They use a sourdough called a Lievito Madre, which is just a very stiff semolina sourdough that they actually, when they feed it with flour and water, they wrap it in these linen cloths, and they're like bricks of wild yeast that they add into the dough.
I love all of this. I could talk about this all day. I'm going to bother you about one more loaf of bread. So in Minnesota, we're having a local milling, local grain renaissance. So
yep.
All of a sudden, we have a bunch of flours, a bunch of tools that you never had before.
Yep.
Tools or ingredients? What do I mean? I think I mean both. Because
yep.
It's kind of like you can't crochet some fancy lace if you don't have the right silk thread, and you can't make these breads without these flours, and all of a sudden we have them. Places like Bakersfield in Northeast. And then if you get this book from Daniel Leder, who I'm talking to, Living Bread, you just take it all to the next level. All right, so I want to talk to you about Schwarzbrot. Let's talk about these very dark, sticky, old world breads. You have this one in the book that I'm a little bit obsessed with. You make this very dark rye, like we were talking about, and then add walnuts, which makes me think it's for the holidays, and then you kind of roll it into a sausage. This is a bread like I've never seen.
Yeah, well, this is from a very famous bakery in Dusseldorf, and this bakery is really kind of, how could I say, it's a bakery that, everybody knows this bakery, and everybody knows Schwarzbrot, and everybody knows the walnut bread. It's a bakery called Hinkle, and it's on the main shopping street. There's still kind of an old world shopping street with clothing stores and butcher shops and cheese shops, and this is the bakery. And I think I'm fair to say that all the bakeries I've been in the world, I don't think anyone sells as much bread as Hinkle does out the front door. Literally in the morning, it takes them, I think, 2 to 3 hours to set up the bread display because there are so many breads that they've baked the night before, and it's all sold out. Out the front door. In the book, I call it. I call Joseph Hinkle Dusseldorf's beloved baker because he is so beloved by the community, and he makes these very, very great German rye breads. And the Schwarzbrot is just one of maybe 50 or 60 breads that he makes on a daily basis.
Okay, I did not have Dusseldorf bakeries on my life list of things I want to get done. Now it's on the list.
He is definitely on my list, for sure.
All right. I am just so crazy about this book. It is, you know, like I said, I'm a little jaded. I've read a lot of baking books, and yours just kind of blew my mind. There's so much good stuff in there.
And I just want to add that I was very fortunate, by chance, to meet this amazing photographer. His name is Jörg Lehmann. And we met through a common friend in Paris. And we kind of, it was like a moment that, like, you felt like it was destined. You know, we met at this restaurant, and he said to me, you know, I've been visiting all these bakers all over Europe, and I want to photograph this great bread book. And I said, well, I've been visiting all these bakers in Europe, and I want to write this great bread book. and we traveled all through Europe together. I mean, when you look at this book, I mean, this is the culmination of dozens of trips across Europe, either by me or by Jörg or by both of us at the same time. And he's captured these brilliant moments, in whether it's in wheat fields in Parma or a miller in Sicily or a bakery in Berlin or Munich or Dusseldorf. He captures the essence of bread in a way that it's unique. I'm not going to say it's the best, but I'm going to say it's unique in a way that really touches your heart and touches your soul.
Well, I am very grateful for it, and I know a lot of home bakers are just going to be dying. This is like a whole new world has opened up in this book. I'm very excited about it.
That was the goal, a whole new world of bread.
All right. Well, everybody, this is Daniel Leader. It's Leader, just like he's leading us to really good bread. Mr. Leader, thank you so much for joining us today.
It's my pleasure. And on my last book tour, I went to Minneapolis and I taught some classes. I've forgotten where it was, but I was amazed at how enthusiastic the students were about baking bread at home. So I know that this is a good place for bread.
This is where we this is what we like to do. We are the holdout. We are the people that did not go gluten-free, and we just continued baking, and we're going to continue baking because it is the staff of life and very important. And now we got the new way to do it. So I can't thank you enough.
And I really appreciate your call, and enjoy the book.
Oh, thank you. All right, everybody. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back. How easy can you make applesauce? Those verbs are wrong, but you know what I'm saying. Really easily. I'm going to talk about the easy applesauces, the complicated applesauces, why you should go out and buy all the apples, because we live in the fall in the north, and that's amazing. And we'll have all of that when we come back. All right, this is a shout out to all good Minnesotans. You got to go support your apple orchards this week. I love apple orchards. Yeah, I know we did pie last week. We're doing applesauce this week because life should also be easy and smell great. What? Okay, so these are all up at WCCORadio.com. They're up on my Facebook page, Dara.Grumdahl. You can find them through my Twitter, @DearDara, or you can call your grandkids and get them to print them out for you. Okay, so here's what we got. I've got all the easy recipes and some of the hard ones. So what's the most basic? This is a nice Martha Stewart recipe where you just peel and cut up your apples and then you put it with a little lemon zest. I like a little lemon zest in there. It gives it a little more body. Martha puts a little cloves and nutmeg in there. Very Christmassy. How about you make yourself some this weekend and then freeze some for yourself at the holidays? That's good life. Slow cooker applesauce, the easiest thing in the world. My kids' third and fourth grade teacher used to do this, just put a crock pot in the corner. Every kid would bring in an apple, and then they had one of those spiral hand crank apple peelers. Everybody took a turn, throw the apple in. How good is that? I mean, you take the core out, you put it in, and then smush it. Your house will smell good. You get applesauce at the end of it. This is a win-win. I've got a recipe for an applesauce bundt cake because I think, whoa, what if you just make so much applesauce, you got tons left over, then you put it in a bundt pan and make a cake. That's called winning life. Betty Crocker's chunky ginger applesauce. Okay, here's the thing I really like, crystallized ginger, different from all the other ginger, so they soak it in a sugar syrup. And then if you sprinkle that on your applesauce, that's good. You can make it with that. Got a nice Betty Crocker recipe. Thank you all the Bettys out there over the generations. And then my last one, apple butter. I know that some of you think applesauce is too mild, is too boring, and I hear from you. If you want to make a real apple butter, I've got a way to do it. It's at WCCORadio.com. You're going to chonk up your apples. You're going to roast them. You're going to pass it through a food mill. You're going to live large. That's what's going on there. All right, we're going to take a little break here. We're going to come back. Mike DeCamp, chef of many things, and we're going to find out what he's up to next. Dara here. All right, I'm talking to a chef I initially knew as YC because he was the youngest chef in all the world. He was he used to work at back in the La Belle Vie kitchen when he was a little bigger than a baby, I think. Was the, what is it, 17 you started?
Oh, right. 17 at D'Amico Cucina, actually.
D'Amico Cucina, YC. Now he's grown up. He's known by his actual name that his parents gave him. Mike DeCamp, he runs many of the best restaurants in town. P.S. Steak has a lot of buzz. That's his restaurant. Manello, our finest Italian place. That's his restaurant. And the parlors. You eat the cult parlor burgers. Then you've had his food. And then Burrow. Burrow has been a little bit of has been a little neglected in the great expansion of the last couple of years. But now you've turned your attention to Burrow. You're here to tell us what up in the North Loop. It used to be so easy to park around there.
Woo. Yeah. They're working on that. There's some ramps going in, yeah. So,
all right, so what's going on at Burrow?
Well, we wanted to kind of breathe a little bit of new life into it, just kind of freshen it up. Anything after 7 years, you know, I'd like to think about it as if I had 1,000 people come into my house every week, it would get a little run down. So Burrow's kind of our house, and we needed to kind of remodel a little bit.
All right, and so what'd you do?
We brought a little bit of, well, besides changing the menu completely, we went in a new direction with the menu, a little more ingredient focused. I remember a few weeks ago listening to one of David Chang's podcasts. He was talking about how all of his friends want to cook Italian food because it's so simple. Like as they get older, I guess that's pretty true. There's nowhere to hide with a bunch of ingredients on the plate or anything like that. So that's really kind of how we focused the main menu at Burrow.
All right. And then, so you have meats now. Burrow was not known for the meats.
True. Well, we sell a lot of meat through a fantastic cheeseburger, but well, we focus a little more on specific meats. So we have a separate menu where we bring in a whole pig or two every week. We break that down and we use all the pieces, parts to make different dishes. We change it once or twice or three times a week, depending on what we run out of. We make an andouille sausage, maybe, or we have a garlic sausage, or we have some pork chops or something with the belly, just anything that we feel like doing with all the pieces parts.
The feet? Someone was actually asking me, he's like, where can I get pig's feet in this town anymore? And I did not know the answer. So,
well, we're saving them to do a little more of a stuffed trotter type of dish.
Oh, really?
Kind of a, not necessarily cotechino, but like braised trotter with lentils. Kind of a classic Italian dish, but something real simple. We only get two a half of a pig, so we have to hold on to those until we
very interesting.
Don't run out.
So this is a trend, because I know at Bachelor Farmer they get in a hog every week and then they bust that out, and people are a little bit obsessive about the getting there on Mondays for the pork chops when those they first come out. It's kind of what would be the equivalent. It's like you want the first slice of cake, I guess. And so is that what's going on at a Burrow? Are you gonna, you know, have that?
We're not focusing on one day a week. That's every day. Not on Sundays because we're closed Sunday nights, but we want to be able to give a little more creative freedom to the kitchen, where it's more forces them to, I want them to be forced to be more creative, because the more we change that menu, the more the dishes on the main menu may change. Just more creativity spawns more creativity, I like to think. So it's kind of fun like that.
Oh, interesting. And so obviously if you're getting in whole animals, you got to be creative in that, you know, nose to tail, mm-hmm. make it work way.
Every week or even twice a week. They have to always be thinking ahead about what they want to do and stay organized too. So that's something that I've been focusing on a lot the past few years is organization and creativity. So it's weird how they go hand in hand. It sounds like they shouldn't, but they do a little bit.
Yeah, because you can be lazy and just have, you know, certain restaurants I could shame that have had the same menu for, you know, 15 years. And
right.
You're like, oh, that sea bass in the style of Nobu is getting a little tired up
right,
on there.
Right, right.
It was very trendy back, I don't know what, in the 90s. And now here we are still. But you just put it on your Cisco list and they bring it every week and they're, you know, and then you just... You can be lazy.
Right, right. It's easy to maintain. It's hard to push forward, I guess, is kind of where we're thinking. So, and that's kind of where that's why we refreshed Burrow, to be able to push forward and to start thinking for the future.
Yeah, cuz that's where you are in your career, right? So you were the person who worked really hard, and then you're the person recognized for your creativity, and then it's like different levels of a video game, and then you get, and then all of a sudden people are like, well, we can manage all these people that used to
be like
you are.
Right. It's a weird path. Now I need to help them grow their careers and teach them what I learned through mine. So.
All right. And so to make that happen, you brought in trolleys. I have not been to see this. What do you – like I think like ding, ding, ding and, you know, some
– the bell's on the way. But we do – so the chefs of the restaurant generally get all of the creative freedom to do the stuff on the menu. What we've done is we've made a little – like a trolley that – any of the cooks, they're scheduled to work it every Friday and Saturday. They come up with the dishes on their own. The chefs taste them, so they're still good, and they help. They in turn help make them better chefs along the way. It's kind of a trickle down teaching, I guess. That didn't work so well for the economy, but whatever. They get to do their own thing. They go out in the dining room. They push the trolley around. They sell it to the tables.
Okay, so they have a trolley. It's like a little push cart-ish thing.
If you're familiar with...
Cheese trolley.
Kind of. I'm reluctant to say dim sum cart because it's not only like Chinese-style dishes, but there's plenty of French, Italian, Mediterranean-style dishes on there, but with some Asian influence too. So... they're free to make whatever kind of dishes they want on the trolley, and we sell them for not into double digits, so $4, $5, $6 this weekend, and it's been great. It's nice to bring a little bit of the back of the house to the front of the house and kind of blur the lines a little bit.
That must be getting people out of their comfort zones.
Very much,
chefs like to, not all of them, but a lot of chefs like to keep their head down, no one looking at them, and just do the work.
Right. That's, I 100% was that person for about 25 years. So so still kind of that person a little bit, but...
But it's good to get out of your comfort zone. I'm glad it's not, you know, they're not flambeing, a rack of lamb or something.
No, but we do some of that with the pastry now. So there's some, we do a little crepe Suzette with some heritage. We make the crepe with some heritage malted barley and then flambe the blueberries. And then we put that over the top. It's kind of beautiful. So there is fire in the kitchen, in the dining room, sorry. But there's a trained professional doing it. So.
The flambé situation. I don't see that too much anymore. All right. So you've got a lot of management and juggling to do in that kind of way. And it seems like a very delicate dance. And then you have to do that while you're also making a babillion. I think that's the metric we use to talk about how many cheeseburgers come out of parlor and go downstairs to...
That's probably the right number. I have good people in place at all the restaurants. I couldn't get away from all the restaurants to go to the other restaurants if I didn't. So I think I like to think that I help them get to the place where I can feel comfortable to go around and make sure everything's tasty and working well, and I don't have to worry too much.
All right. Look, since we've got a couple minutes, let me just bother you about P.S. Steak. So last we left, it was very much a work in progress with some terrific elements and some kind of awkward growing pains. Where is P.S. Steak today in the most historic restaurant space that we have in the Twin Cities, in the old 510 up, you know, everybody knows. If you don't know what the 510 is, you got to know. But P.S. Steak is there. It's been a restaurant since the 1920s, I think, or certainly since the 80s. And where are we with P.S. Steak? Is it finding its people?
Yeah, we put a big focus into the hospitality end of things. Wyatt has really developed the menu into...
That's a bartender. I interviewed him recently for some stuff at MSPMag.com and in the magazine. So you got a new kind of a bartender to hold things down.
Yeah, Keith Marotek. He came to us from Norseman. I actually first met Keith when he was working at Marvel Bar. And we're so happy to have him. The place has always had a great cocktail program since I started there, I should say. Back when La Belle Vie first opened, we kind of helped spur the cocktail renaissance in town there. And I'm happy to see someone back there driving the someone.
I'm just realizing, like, my brain is putting together some thoughts. The kind of bartender is the role that the maitre d' played mm-hmm. a generation ago. Like, that's what you need. You don't. You need that one talent anchor who knows people's name yeah. that kind of holds down a destination bar.
Yep, and for people to come and see, too. You have to, at least when you're starting. Once people get used to going to your bar, then they go kind of see whoever. The style kind of stays the same a little bit. But when you're first getting going, it's nice to have someone familiar, someone that you recognize, someone that you know is talented and makes great drinks. And, you know, not that we didn't have that before, but there was no one person to point to. Mm-hmm. And now Keith has kind of taken up that mantle. So.
Interesting. Very interesting. All right. So P.S. Steak is kind of putting more people in place. I know everybody's getting ready for holiday already, thinking about where they're going.
We don't want to talk about that yet.
Think about what. And so P.S. Steak is on that list because it's a destination. Yep. You look good. Everybody looks good. That's a lighting thing. That's like the most underappreciated part of restaurants is that the lighting of the restaurants where you look really good, those are always packed.
We keep the lights dim in the steakhouse end of it, so it's un-Instagrammable. The food, anyway. It's dark, so it never is going to look good.
I've done it myself. I've Instagrammed that. But I hear, you know, Grapevine tells me that that's the hot bar right now, is the bar back in the steakhouse.
I love that bar. It's the one thing we added to add. If you're not familiar with the space, there was no bar in the back half of the dining room. But or the back dining room, but we added a bar back there to kind of create some action and some less formality, I guess, to just make it seem more homey.
And when I first went, it has sort of a goth Harry Potter-ish vibe to it. And I thought, oh, is this too much? No, people love it. It's just exactly what they wanted. All these things you got to juggle in a restaurant today. All right, Mike DeCamp, thank you for talking to us about the goings-on at all the different little places. I appreciate you coming in today. And people, if you want to see an uncomfortable chef behind a dim sum cart making some magic, I guess hit DeBurro.
That's it. Fridays and Saturdays right now. But
all right. Well, thank you, Chef.
Thank you very much.
All right. We'll come back. We got a couple minutes for the Ask Me Anything. And text us if you got something. Dara here. All right. We've got a couple minutes. I got a question. Bakeries to go to get those good Northern European breads in town. I am still mourning the loss of Blackie's in Northeast. That was such a good bakery. Places I really like, Sun Street Breads. It's right off 46th Street. Solveig Tofte does all the Scandinavian breads. She's a kind of a jet-set international baking teacher these days. So Solveig Tofte over at Sun Street. Really good. And then I just can't get enough of that Bakersfield up at Kieran's Cafe in Northeast. That's that big food complex building, food building, with the cheese that they make and the Red Table meats and the different breads. Let's see. I got a question about pickled pig's feet. Or I guess it's just a comment. Pickled pig's feet. Yum. Yeah, I am with you there. The best pig's feet I ever had in town was Vincent, a restaurant, which is gone, unfortunately. And very good for the skin. Very good to have collagen in your in your diet. All right. So what is happening else around here? I got next week. We've got Lee Svitek, Dean of the Star Tribune Taste Section. They have a big 50th anniversary that they are celebrating. So we're going to have Lee come in. She's going to talk to us about all the changes she's seen at the Taste Section over the week, over the years, over the many years. And then also there's this big new thing coming to the North Loop called Three Jack. It's a golf simulators and cocktails for all those of you who thought that Can-Can Wonderland was too artsy. Then there's something for you. To me, it seems a little spendy. It's like $60 an hour to pretend to hit golf balls while you're drinking. I don't know. Apparently, I'm of the old school. But maybe this is going to be a big corporate thing. I don't know. We'll have those guys in. They will explain things. So the Twin Cities, they are changing. And then they are also not changing. People want a golf and cocktail. And people want to read the Taste Section. So that's our big takeaway. So, all right. Till next week, those applesauce recipes are up. And may your apples sauce and your resolve never melt. And I will meet you here next week on Off the Menu.
Hey, I'm gum disease. You may know me by my formal name, periodontal disease. No? I can't believe this. No respect. Same story everywhere I go. Over half of all adults in America live with me, and they act like they don't even know I exist. I mean, come on. Whole body health? I am gum disease. I am literally linked to almost every major disease. Diabetes, heart disease, Alzheimer's. You can't just ignore me.
Find a dentist near you committed to caring about all of you. Visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Get smoother, brighter skin instantly in one easy step. Dermalogica's Daily Microfoliant gives you the smooth, glowy skin you want without damaging your skin barrier. This gentle exfoliating powder activates with water to smooth out rough texture and brighten skin. It's powerful enough to deliver results, yet gentle enough to use every single day, even on sensitive skin. See the results for yourself. Visit Dermalogica.com and use code SMOOTH at cart for an exclusive free gift with $65 purchase.
Escape the heat to True North convenience stores and get any size True Oasis fountain drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi fountain drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.